The following podcast contains two drunk jerks.
And sometimes their friends.
Using obscene language and spoiling movies from the 80s.
So sit back and enjoy this audio experience.
Hey blockheads, EG Sites here, breaking in with breaking news. So after 3+ years, we finally have a Patreon up. Patreon.com/blockbusternostalgia. It's something we've talked about. Unfortunately, both me and Francisco have had some severe impact to our income due to everything that's going on right now. Realize that we're not alone in that in any way, and a lot of you probably in that same boat. But if you are in a good situation, or once things settle down, if you find yourself in a situation where you can give a little support to the podcast, we sure would appreciate it. There's several different tiers there, some extra goals for bonus episodes and things like that, and stuff where you can vote on movies for us to watch and all that sort of thing. So I'm pretty excited about it. So if you have the opportunity and the ability, please do go over. Again, it's patreon.com/blockbusternostalgia. Please go over, check it out, throw in a few bucks if you can, and we sure do appreciate it. All right, enjoy the show.
The movie where you see Jack Nicholson's performance and you're like, wow, he is going for it. But then you see Jack Palance and you're like, actually, kind of underplaying it.
The movie where you see the guy from the Colt 45 commercials as Harvey Dent, and then 1995 rolls around, Tommy Lee Jones steals that job.
The movie where after being instructed to stay home for their own safety, a group of people run out into the streets following a crazy clown from TV that's just handing out cash. Weird and fantasy and fate.
Predictably, most of them die. This is Batman on Blockbuster Nostalgia. Hey, blockheads, and welcome back to Blockbuster Nostalgia, the movie podcast counting down the biggest hit movies of the 1980s, one by one. I'm E.G. Seitz.
I'm Francisco Landin.
Hey, I'm Henry Barajas. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thank you for joining us. Henry here is a comic book writer, as well as a big wig with Top Cow Productions.
Yeah, I'm one of the many udders.
The many udders. That makes sense. You also had your own comic book, right?
Yeah, I put out a graphic novel called La Voz de Mayo, Tata Rambo. It's about a Native American tribe in Tucson, Arizona, that was able to successfully lobby and keep their land from being bulldozed by the city of Tucson to make room for the Interstate 10. And my great-grandfather, Ramon Jauregui, was one of the big advocates for the tribe and the migrants that had been there. So I wrote it. Jay Gonzo, based in Phoenix, he did the art. And we have Bernardo Brees and Claire Napier all together. I created a graphic novel that came out through Image Comics and Top Cow Productions last November.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, it's very cool. Yeah, we've been kind of waiting for Henry to come on this one because we wanted to do something bigger for Batman because we're in the top five now.
We're in the top five, and Batman is one of the most iconic comic book movies, so we wanted a comic book guy to get in on this.
Yeah,
because any excuse to talk about Batman.
Right?
I'll make time for it. Yeah, he's my favorite.
So, yeah, Batman. This is, of course, 1989's Batman. It's Tim Burton. It's Michael Keaton. It's not obviously the first superhero movie. We've talked about Superman 2.
Yeah.
You had Superman before that.
Yeah. It really like changed the game, though.
It definitely changed the game, though. Because especially after Superman 2, you get, you know, Superman 3 and 4 were kind of whatever movies. Canon took over. They were very low budget.
4, right? Yeah, 4 was with Canon.
Yeah, Canon Pictures. And then this movie actually had been in the works for like a decade with them talking about different directors, different writers, different screenplays bounced around. Robin was going to be in it for a while. The Riddler was going to be in it. We have all kinds of casting possibilities that we'll go into, but finally came together with Tim Burton in 89.
And it made $251 million.
In the U.S., yeah, over $400 million worldwide. Giant, giant hit.
Which 30 years ago, again, you know, just for inflation, that's like $42 trillion now.
Yep.
It was a huge hit. And it did change because the 80s was not a big superhero decade. Not like today, where every movie is a superhero movie.
Yeah.
Well, there was like Captain America and Punisher.
Oh, there's the Punisher one. The Punisher one where he didn't even wear the skull on his shirt. And then, I was a big Supergirl fan.
And Supergirl.
Which one were you saying there? I'm sorry, I cut you off.
Oh, there was Hulk, too.
Oh, right? the show, yeah.
Yeah, was that the 80s?
It was the late 70s into the 80s, because I think they did that
that movie?
That like Hulk versus Thor movie was like 80 or 81.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, there hasn't been a decade where there's no super. I mean, was Wonder Woman 70s? Did it lead into the 80s? No?
No, I don't think it ever went into the 80s, but I mean, there was always superheroes around, but most of them were TV and most of them were really low budget, kind of cheesy.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely Batman. Really catapulted everything, I think. I mean, Superman made it possible, but Batman is such a unique, beautiful achievement in cinematography. And for Batman, I think the character was able to be, was strengthened in a way that, like, the comic books was inching him towards that way. But it was just like, okay, now this is really kind of cemented him in so many different ways.
I think
And Tim Burton was an interesting choice.
Tim Burton was a very interesting.
Very good choice, I think, because his style is so crazy, and you see it in, like, the buildings that they had to build and, like, these crazy statues with, like, shrouded, hooded guys. And, like, I don't know, it's so unique that it made it, oh, yeah, Batman isn't the Adam West guy punching another guy with the power sign.
He did lose the camp. I mean, it was definitely derivative of the Alan Moore kind of, and Frank Miller,
Yeah, for sure. And they talk about a little bit in interviews and stuff. They talked about, reading Dark Knight Returns and reading Killing Joke and stuff like that. So that was definitely a influence on them. But then, I think you're right. Tim Burton's weird, just aesthetic design is certainly just a big influence that he was like, no, we're just building all sets and there's gargoyles and statues. And
yeah, even giving the Joker like that permanent scarred mouth,
right?
That Jack Nicholson has, even that is like very interesting and different than any Batman stuff that we had seen. It's funny that Batman has already like kind of lends himself to camp so weirdly, like the old Adam West.
It's the cape.
It's a cape? You think so? Yeah, that's
put
fair.
A cape on anybody, and it's pretty glam,
That's very fair. And also, the bright blue and gray in the old school design.
Yeah, it was like it was all Andy Warhol.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and awesome. I think also, too, I mean, the fact that it's a normal guy with no powers running around in tights punching a clown. Like, when you just think about it like that,
that's pretty silly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like we get these two movies. We get this one and Batman Returns, which I really like Batman Returns a lot, too, because it's so weird and dark and Danny DeVito and, and then right back into camp. Then right back into, like, funny clown guys or, like, Mr. Freeze making everybody sing.
All the ice punks. Yeah. He has his, like, choir boys.
Yeah, like, all his guys are choir boys for him. Like.
Sing, let's sing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it was definitely, by that point, they wanted to sell toys. They needed to sell toys.
Yes.
It was about merchandise.
Yeah, for sure.
And,
This movie has a bit of that. Certainly, they just do a better job of disguising it. Because there was certainly a meeting where they're like, no, we can't just have the Batmobile. We also have to have, like, a jet.
Yeah.
And we ought to have
Batwing.
Yeah, exactly. And a couple of different, like, gadgets for him to use.
Yeah, but, like, in the 89, it's definitely, like, very bare bones compared to Returns. I mean, it does have that gothic London feel where they shot it and stuff.
Definitely my favorite thing about this movie is the design, is the music, is kind of the feel of the film, more so necessarily than any specific plot point or anything like that.
Right. And it also spawned, I think, the best incarnation of Batman, which is the animated Batman series, which is,
I think for our generation, for the most
so
part,
good, yeah.
it becomes the iconic Batman.
And the best kind of, like, telling of it, yeah.
No, totally. I mean, Kevin Conroy is Batman and Mark Hamill is the Joker.
That Bruce Timm design, the red sky, that like kind of just square jawed classic look.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was the first cartoon to be drawn on black paper.
Right.
You still had the theme song by
Danny Elfman.
It's definitely such an amazing extension of all that.
And this is a movie, speaking of Danny Elfman, a lot of the producers were not on board with that idea, because Danny Elfman, you know, he was in that, you know, a band, Oingo Boingo, right? Yeah. And then, you know, he does like Beetlejuice and more like kind of comedy movies and stuff. And they're like, come on, this is a like big, serious blockbuster.
I think Beetlejuice was after, right?
I think it was a year before this, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was like 87, 88. Yeah. Well, that's why he had worked with Michael Keaton, and he pushed for Michael Keaton. So right. Kind of like everything about this movie. This is another interesting about this movie, is that kind of everything about this movie, I feel like, was going against the executives. Like, they were like, you can't have Michael Keaton. Let's get a big, macho guy. You can't have Danny Elfman because he does like comedic stuff. Let's get like a more established, you know. And
Even the director, originally they wanted someone like a Richard Donner or someone like, you know, someone that had done big budget type movies.
So everything, that's what one of the reasons why I like this movie so much, is it's such a weird place in cinema history, and it's such a huge hit that it's one of those things that it's just like, oh, everything just came together so nice. This nice little stew, like this nice little pot.
Even with Jack Nicholson being just quintessential like Hollywood movie star, he's like, it's in my contract, I don't show up till 10.
Yeah.
I'm just not going to do it because I party at night.
Yeah.
This is my friend. He's going to play my henchman. Just write him into the movie. He's my friend, man. And it all just kind of works for whatever reason. But let's I guess get into it. The movie starts with the score, really.
Yeah.
Like the score is the opening credits, but really you don't really see what's going on in the opening credits. Eventually it pulls back. You see the big bat symbol and everything, but it's basically just that Danny Elfman score. And you're like, holy shit, this is like, you're getting pumped already just from the music.
It has a bait and switch opening.
It does.
Where it kind of looks like you're going to see Thomas Wayne get shot. But it's like a weird slobby version of him.
Right. It's like the out-of-towner version of Thomas Wayne and his family.
Yeah. And then, and then they have a little kid, and it's set up the same way that it's been set up in the comic book.
Right.
Where they're leaving like a play, and they're going through an alley.
And the guy pulls out the gun, even points it at the family and stuff. And you're like, oh, shit. Right. It's going to be Batman, Birth of Batman right here.
Yeah. And it's just a mugging. And we're deep in the Batman Gotham. Like, everybody, he's been existing for a while. But
a question I have is, how long has he been existing in this movie? Because the commissioner, like, no one thinks he's real, right? The commissioner doesn't think he's real. The newspaper people all make fun of Robert Wool's character, Knox.
Yeah.
They're writing about him. The first thing that happens is you see Batman watching the mugging, which is kind of funny. It's I don't know how Batman of a thing that is to do. Just be like, oh, those people are getting mugged. Oh, just wait up here.
He's proving a point.
I'm sure they'll be fine.
He's making a point.
He's not going to shoot that kid.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there has to be a crime.
Right. I'm just saying, you would think he like would swoop in, stop them or whatever. And he's like, nah, it's cool. I'll catch up with him later. Because the most important thing he has to do is he got to get his name recognition out there. So after he kicks the one guy, he grabs the other guy and he's just like, I'm not going to like put you in jail. I'm not going to kill you. Just tell your friends. I'm Batman.
Yeah, he's like, make sure everybody knows.
Yeah.
I got some branding I got
to
do.
I'm really trying to get Batman the name out there. I got, you know, follow my feed on Instagram.
Here's my mixtape.
Yeah, exactly. I slipped it in your pocket. If you could just...
Yeah.
I'm the Batman.
The idea of, like, even in the comics, until recently, Batman doesn't exist. Everybody, even in Gotham and the citizens are like, I've never seen him. There's really no pictures of him. He doesn't really pose.
I like that idea. I like that take. It's a cool like way to go about it with him being that mysterious and stuff.
Right.
But it does set up, and a couple other things kind of make me think this is supposed to be like early Batman. Because, you know, it's the birth of the Joker.
Right, right, right.
It's the first scene, like the spoiler alert, obviously, but the movie ends with the bat signal and stuff like that. So it's like, oh, this is like, you know, maybe not necessarily year one Batman, but this is, you know, first couple of years in Gotham kind of Batman. Michael Keaton is 39 years old.
Yeah. Well, maybe he was gone for longer than we thought he was.
He took a lot of training time over there in Asia or whatever.
How old was that? Was he 39 when he made that movie?
I think he was 39 when it came out. So yeah. I think he was 38 when he was making it.
No way.
Yeah.
He's in
his 60s now?
Well, freaking Nicholson is 52? In his 50s.
Yeah, Nicholson's like 52 in this movie, which is crazy.
I mean, yeah, like, I mean, he's been around since, you know, 70s.
Yeah, Cuckoo's Nest and all that.
Right.
Yeah, 60s.
I mean, it makes sense. Jack Nicholson, huge star. You wanted a huge star. It's the same thing they did with Superman, where they're like, oh, let's get Marlon Brando and let's get Gene Hackman. And
right.
We'll cast whoever for Superman.
Right.
Yeah.
But it is, it's one of the things I like about this movie is that he is such a myth in this movie. And then people are like, he doesn't exist. What are you talking about, Batman? Like, this guy's talking about Batman over here. And even Bruce Wayne, people are like, she's dating some guy named Wayne. And I'm like, multi-billionaire?
Yeah. Richest man in the world.
Bruce Wayne?
I kept thinking, too, because in Begins, they make a big deal about, like, oh, you'd have to go halfway around the world to find someone that didn't know who you are. You're fucking Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
And in this movie, they're like, ah, who's that? Wayne?
Yeah, and this one, he's much more like that millionaire you don't know about. He's just living in a mansion.
Yeah.
Like, reclusive. That's one of the things I like about
the Keaton. They never mention, like, Wayne Industries. They never mention, like, any sort of businesses and stuff. It's just like, no, he's just rich. He's a rich guy.
He's just, like, a reclusive rich guy in a mansion.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, the more you look, the more you put it under a microscope, the more it doesn't make sense.
Yeah,
so the less you have to explain. And the
well, and it's not necessarily, that's not even a bad thing necessarily. That's just the take they went with. They're like, I don't know, he's a rich guy. Like, who cares? He's going to beat up the Joker. Shut up. He's got a cape, you know, whatever.
I mean, all these movies are so centered around the villain. I think that's what makes it so interesting.
And that's clearly, I think, that was always kind of my, that was the thing when Begins came out. One of the things that made me so happy about that movie, I was like, oh, it's a Batman movie about Batman, not about the villain. Which these movies, and I think Tim Burton's, you know, if you think like Edward Scissorhands and Beetlejuice and all that stuff, like he's much more interested in like the tragic monster figures.
Right. Yeah, because I think that's more interesting. You know, like I think what makes Batman is his rogues gallery. Like you can't name 10 Captain America villains.
Right.
Right, right,
can't
right.
name 10 Iron Man villains. You can, certainly. I mean, there's Sinister Six. For a reason, for Spider-Man. Like, there are six.
Yep.
Spider-Man's the only one that even comes close.
Yeah.
Like, everyone else are like, yeah, there's a couple.
But what makes Batman is his cast. And I think the Penguin, I think, was the best, like, opera. This was such a well thought out story. But, I mean, within the Batman 89, I think the Joker was fun. And it was such a great performance, despite it being a Jack Nicholson performance.
Right. Oh, it's an amazing performance, and it kind of sets the bar, and it's a bar that stayed pretty high, I think. Like,
what you're talking about, there's never really been a bad Joker.
Yeah. Even the man.
We know what you're thinking about.
We're all thinking about Jared Leto, but I feel like Jared Leto's a fine Joker. He just had a shitty movie that he was in. No, not Ice.
Not buying it. I'm not sure I buy it either, honestly, but
I think what sours it for me is his off camera performance.
Yeah. Sending fair. Condoms to people.
Yeah, dead pigs.
Fair, that's fair. That's true. I forgot.
You know, you when you get to Heath Ledger, it's clear from the like crew and production photos, he was Heath Ledger. And when he was on camera, he was the Joker.
Right.
Like, I respect that.
And that's obvious. I mean, when you're thinking, you know, no offense to a Jared Leto or to any of the people that have voiced him or even Cesar Romero or whatever. But when you think of the Joker, obviously, you know, it was Jack Nicholson, it was Mark Hamill, and then Heath Ledger was the next one that made, like,
this
very distinct, very different kind of version.
Oh, and,
Cesar
Romero, I think, was an exceptional Joker as well.
Oh, he's great. Oh, yeah. I think most people just ignore it because most people don't want to kind of acknowledge the weird, campy 66 show, even though
I just also think it's probably just not, I mean, if I had to assume, it's probably outside of their peripheral. You know, I mean, like, it's not syndicated anymore. It was syndicated as soon as it was done after, what, 4 seasons?
Yeah, it was still on when we were kids.
It stayed on TV forever. And it's back on TV, you know.
Yeah, well, it's one of those shows also that kind of exist in parody. Like, you know it because The Simpsons did stuff on it. You know it because Family Guy did like jokes on it and stuff like that. And it exists in that.
But it also exists as a '60s time period. Yeah. You know, like it was the show.
Everyone it was watched. A huge hit. You know, it was a huge hit and had tons of celebrity cameos, Sammy Davis Jr., all these like, you know, big famous people.
Every time they'd walk along the building.
Exactly. Yep. Which is one of the best bits in the show was just like, how are we going to get these cameos in? I don't know. They're walking up a building. Somebody pops his head out.
Yeah, it's great. It was like an old school variety hour show where you're just like, the window would open and, oh, look at that.
Yeah.
Oh, Colonel Brando's in that thing.
The movie opens, like I said, Batman, he doesn't stop the mugging, but he shows up, does his thing, has the cool, you know, the trailer line where he grabs the guy. I'm Batman,
yeah.
That whole thing. Then we get to the Harvey Dent. This is our first, it's Billy Dee. It's Lando Calrissian.
What a cool fucking casting.
Yeah.
Billy
Dee. 45, you mentioned.
Yeah.
And you're like, holy shit, it's Billy Dee Williams. Lando Calrissian, who was a Two-Face in Star Wars.
Yeah, that's fair.
Two-Face, Lando. Right?
Yeah, and it's exciting. It's exciting to be like, Billy Dee's Harvey Dent, he's going to be Two-Face, right, everybody? He's going to be Two-Face.
So doing a very minimal amount of digging, that was always the understanding with him, was like, oh, yeah, we'll set you up, and then we'll do Two-Face.
Eventually.
Then they decided, obviously, with the third one to go with Tommy Lee.
Who's a much bigger star.
Much bigger star.
Right.
But they actually, he was still under contract. They had to pay Billy Dee Williams not to play Two-Face.
Yeah, that sucks.
They were so.
I did not know that. Wow.
Yeah, they so were like, we're not Billy Dee, though, that they actually paid him not to be Two-Face.
Well, by that time, what was that, like 1994, 95?
Yeah.
95, yeah. It just, like, doesn't matter. And it's also, like, a completely different take. And it's, like,
yes, right.
Bearing on what Burton did.
Right, yeah, because by that time, Returns comes out and it's a big hit, but it's not as big a hit as this one was, kind of adjusted.
There's a lot of complaints about it being so dark and
weird.
Right,
a lot of letters to Warner Brothers from concerned mothers about how their kids saw, I don't know, Batman kick a girl in the face or whatever the fuck. Penguin eating fish raw or whatever he was doing. So. Yeah. You know, McDonald's tie-ins and stuff. They got a lot of complaints. So instead they're like, Tim Burton, you're out. Joel Schumacher, you're in.
Yeah. They famously had a meeting with him where they told Burton, like, we think we can go a different direction, but you can produce. Yeah. How about that? How about you produce it? So by the time that comes out, it's a whole different game. Like you said, it's all about the McDonald's toys. It's all about getting kids to the theater. Like, it's now just about how bright and colorful we can make it and how much we can sell. Yeah. Which is fine. I mean, what happens?
It happens. I mean, I went and saw it. I was a kid. Yeah. It had Batman in it. What are you going to do?
Yeah, exactly. But then we get the beginning of the Joker, which is really cool.
Jack Napier. This is a movie original concept.
Right. Where he's just like this gangster guy.
Yeah.
Who also happened to kill Thomas Wayne.
Thomas Wayne, yeah.
And they cast a different guy for that scene.
They do. It's like a young guy that kind of looks like Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. He's like,
it's eerie, yeah.
Yeah, it is eerie. Because he has that same like Nicholson smile and a little bit like the nose and stuff.
But he's like super skinny.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, because Nicholson's like 53 or whatever. I mean, he'd be like obviously 20 years.
If they did that now, it's the Irishman, right? It's just Jack Nicholson, but yeah, CGI'd just a face, yeah.
Digitally, which again, you could have done that in The Irishman. We would have been all right with that.
Oh, yeah. They could have just recast somebody else, yeah.
Or at least put De Niro's face over the guy beating up the other guy.
So it didn't look ridiculous when he beats up that guy outside the
Yeah, like an 85-year-old man.
I don't know if you've seen The Irishman, but
I have yet to make the 3-hour commitment.
It's a good movie, is a very silly scene where we're supposed to believe that 85-year-old Robert De Niro is beating the shit out of a guy who can barely move.
Hey, man. Have you seen Robert De Niro?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember him in that
movie? Great shape.
Yeah, he fought Stallone in that fucking
Grudge Match.
Yeah. Grudge Match movie. That's right. Still got it. You guys still got it. I mean, much better than I'm going to look when I'm 85.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'll be dead, but
yeah, I'm not making it. There's no way I'm making it to 85.
But yeah, so then we get introduced to Robert Wool, who plays Knox. He's the reporter that's tracking down Batman.
Also known as Arliss. Also another weird eyebrow smile guy.
Yeah, weird eyebrows on this. Weird eyebrows all over this movie.
Yeah, it's Nicholson, Arliss, the guy that plays young Nicholson.
Yeah.
Jack Palance.
Jack Palance, yeah. And then we also get introduced to Vicky Vale.
Beautiful Kim Basinger.
Yeah.
Yeah. But does a great job in this movie. She's like peak Kim Basinger.
I mean, this is the peak of her career, probably. Because this could fall is right after, 9.5 weeks, right?
Right.
With her and Mickey Rourke. It's like these two are kind of made her a huge star.
Yeah, and she's great in it. So good, in fact, that Batman almost is just like, yeah, like I'm gonna reveal everything right away.
Batman's like, this girl, though, maybe I'll just tell her my secret identity and hang out. And also, we're jumping ahead a little bit, but the first night they hook up, he gets her wasted.
Yeah, he does.
He's like stone cold sober. Yeah. It takes, in a post-Me Too world, you're like, is that okay, Batman? That kind of seemed a little much.
Yeah. Alfred.
I mean, I'm pretty sure it was all consensual.
Yeah, yeah.
She wanted to get drunk, and there was also that really sweet scene where they're with Alfred and he's telling
that
stories.
Is a good scene. And actually, the two scenes back to back, the one where they're in the huge dining room, they're sitting on opposite ends.
Yeah, I love that.
Pass the salt thing. That's a really good bit.
Yeah.
And then when they go for the scene with Alfred, you're right. It is very sweet. It's a very good scene.
Yeah, I mean, it seems consensual. It didn't seem like he was.
No, it definitely is. I'm joking. Yeah. But no, she's definitely pretty wasted.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just a good drunk, man.
Yeah.
He's probably as drunk as her. He just keeps his shit together.
Yeah, he keeps his shit. I mean, he's been rich his entire life.
He's been drinking 100-year-old scotch.
Yeah, exactly.
Since he was 17. Like, that's... He's a pro at this now.
Yeah, that's true. So we also mention the only other woman in Gotham, I guess, outside of the Martha Wayne who gets killed, is Jerry Hall, who plays Jack Palance, his wife, maybe, girlfriend, but then also the Joker's getting it in.
Right, right. She's the one with the face mask.
Eventually she has the face mask, yeah.
Yeah.
And she was, interesting enough, she was Mick Jagger's longtime girlfriend, had a couple kids with him. And also I feel like she's blonde. She's pretty. Was she just the backup Vicky Vale that they're like, oh, we'll give you a part?
Like the understudy?
Yeah.
Like Kim Basinger's understudy? That's a good... I like that part a lot because it's such a creepy... It's a good testament to how crazy the Joker is.
Well, when he's like messes up her face?
Yeah, when he messes up her face and he keeps her around. And like, he also... He has crazy... He obsesses over Kim Basinger. Enough where then we get this... Like
love triangle
thing where it's
which
like
which is actually even more it's like more of like a love hexagon because you have Bruce is in love with Kim Basinger or Vicky Vale. Bruce is in love with Vicky Vale. Joker's in love with Vicky Vale. Vicky Vale's in love with Batman. Robert Wool Knox is in love with Vicky Vale, and assumingly Jerry Hall's in love with the Joker.
Yeah,
probably, I mean, she does let him like fuck her face all kinds.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like they love. Love stories in this thing.
It's really the most romantic movie ever made, Batman 89. Yeah.
And it's all about obsessions. None of it is actual, like, except for Bruce Wayne and Vicky Vale.
They're the only ones that kind of have a normal relationship.
Everybody else is just like, I'm obsessed with Batman.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with this coworker. I'm obsessed with the Joker. I'm obviously just obsessed with whatever.
Yeah, whatever strikes his fancy at the time.
Yeah. He's obsessed with funny crime.
Yeah, that's true.
Serious.
I mean, he's
crime.
Obsessed with the jokes.
Yeah.
That's why you have all those bits where he's like gets punched and like spits out the fake teeth or like goes to grab somebody and it's a fake arm. Like he's just in it for the bits.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of his the bits. The fact that he'll sacrifice, like he'll put makeup on just so that at some point he can take it off and freak her out. Like that's a commitment.
Yeah. So I did want to jump back real quick. So we talked about the iconic, you know, I am Batman line. Evidently, in the script, he says, I am the knight.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Which just made me immediately think of the famous, you know, animated series, I am Vengeance, I am the Knight, I am Batman.
Conroy.
Yeah, I mean, it is weird to tell somebody who you are.
Yeah, right, to just
you
say
don't
it
just
out
grab
loud.
People yeah, and be like, and I am like, Henry.
Yeah, I mean, I could see why. It's a better line, you know, and there is that level of suspense of disbelief that you have when you watch.
I think it's a movie. Little bit more of like a good on paper line. Like it's more poetic. You can see like, oh, I'm the knight.
Yeah.
Like it's mysterious.
I can also see it being like, can he say Batman just in case we need it for the trailer?
And then they use it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Well,
that's cool.
It's a better line. I was recently watching a a video of Arnold Schwarzenegger talked about how he wanted to say, "I will be back."
Oh, that's right.
He didn't like the way he sounds when he says, "I'll be back."
Really?
Yeah. And
he thought it was James more robotic, Cameron right? Said,
"Did you write, I don't tell you how to act. Don't tell me how to write my fucking movie."
Which is funny because it's like your job to tell him how to act.
And then like years after, you know, or at least after the movie came out, then he never thought that would be a signature line, which, you know, "I am Batman" is something that will be uttered forever.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is definitely super,
Batman
super
Begins,
iconic.
He says it.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I don't think he says it again after that.
No, I don't think. Well, and that's just, but
that's probably why it's so iconic is because part of the problem with "I'll Be Back," we've talked about this many times, is they say it fucking a million times after Terminator 2. They fit it in constantly.
Every Terminator sequel has had him say it or somebody say it or just
multiple people say it.
Yeah, they can't make a Terminator movie without some "I'll Be Back" in there.
Yeah.
Because it's not. I mean, what is a Terminator movie anymore? You know, it just doesn't make any sense.
Right. Well, yeah. That's a whole other conversation about how
I'm not buying it. Yeah. I'm not buying a Terminator movie. Yeah. I'm not. You got a show? I'm not buying it. You got a new movie and you're bringing everybody back? I'm not buying it. Yeah. CGI Arnold Schwarzenegger shooting CGI with Furlong in the face? Yeah. Not buying it.
Speaking of, buying or not buying, let's talk a little bit about some of the casting what ifs. Because this movie, like I said, went through a lot of different directors. There was some ones that were very, very close to happening. Very close to happening. There was two people. One, Robin Williams almost played the Joker, was offered the role, agreed to the role. And then at the last second, they gave it to Nicholson.
Because Nicholson was a bigger star.
Well, there was another Joker.
Who do you got? John Lithgow. Yeah, that's right.
He convinced him that he wasn't right for the part.
Lithgow, Willem Dafoe supposedly was considered an audition. Dourif was, I think, Cronenberg's choice when Cronenberg was attached.
Who was attached with John Lithgow?
That was Burton.
Was that Till Burton? Man, John Lithgow would have been such an interesting Joker.
That may have been.
I think he got his due with Dexter.
Yeah, I'm a big Lithgow fan. I like John Lithgow a lot, actually. I really like the one where he has multiple personalities. God damn it! Raising Henry.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a really good movie.
When he's got like 18 personalities or something like that. And that's a good.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, just check it out. It's a good testament to Lithgow's crazy acting. Sometimes he's a little boy, sometimes he's a lady. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weird, crazy, off the wall thriller that I like a lot. What a crazy world this would have been if John Lithgow was.
Yeah. Would John Lithgow have been just a megastar at that point?
Yeah.
Right?
I think, because, I mean, obviously you go with Nicholson because he's the bigger star. Yeah, he's a name. Yeah. He's bigger than Keaton. I mean, Keaton was big at the time, but he's still bigger than Keaton.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Keaton was a stand-up comic.
Yeah.
Keaton was the Mr. Mom guy. He was Beetlejuice.
Yeah, and even some of the jokes in it are credited to him, right? They said in some of the interviews that some of the funnier stuff in it is Michael Keaton just improvising stuff.
So that very close to happen. And then Vicki Vale, they had already cast...
It was Sean Young?
Sean Young, right. Yes, so they had already cast Sean Young. She actually got hurt practicing horse riding for a scene that didn't end up making the movie where her and Bruce Wayne go horse riding together.
That's heartbreaking.
Oh, wow.
And so then they immediately recast her. Then a couple years later, she shows up in a cat suit being like, "Hey, Catwoman though, right?"
Oh,
and
they're
like,
yeah.
Michelle Pfeiffer though. Sorry.
Yeah, that's a famous that's one of the famous crazy actress things that people talk about.
That's a shame.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
Very close, Sean Young, unfortunate for her. Literally every person in Hollywood in the 80s was at some point rumored to be playing Batman. Most specifically, you have Mel Gibson, who Richard Donner had worked with, that was rumored to be. There was some Ray Liotta talk, some Pierce Brosnan talk. Famously, there's been a lot of debate whether or not this is real, but it was at least published in some magazines back in the 80s that they were talking to Bill Murray.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow, what a weird...
Be a Joker.
No, for Batman.
Oh, I know, but I think he'd be a better Joker.
Yeah, he would be a better Joker, you're right. Especially, like, now...
He was already a clown in one movie.
Quick Change.
Quick Change, yeah, where he's the thief.
And he was great in that movie.
Yeah. But I think now Bill Murray as the Joker would be really... Like, if they did a Batman Returns and brought Keaton back and then brought... Well, I mean, Jack Nicholson's still alive, but... If you had
he's 92 years old.
Yeah. He can't remember lines anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a fact. It's unfortunate. He just can't. I mean, he doesn't need to.
He's insanely rich because of this movie. I mean, because of a lot of stuff, but this movie made he made more money off of this movie than any actor ever until I think Robert Downey. Or maybe actually Tom Cruise with some of the Mission Impossible deals. But for a very long time, it was
the back end.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how they talked him into it. And yeah, he made 60 mil right off the bat on this movie. And he's still,
So
smart. He doesn't have to remember lines.
Yeah.
Just show up.
I did want to also give a shout out. You do get, well, a couple of things that are interesting is you get a Bob Kane cameo that was cut, sort of. So,
good.
And also there's no Bill Finger credit, which I think now contractually they have to do. But at the time, it was just Batman created by Bob Kane. And then when the police sketch, it's like a man bat, basically, with Bob
Kane. His original art. Yeah,
exactly. Evidently, he was supposed to be the sketch artist in that scene, was sick that day. They just cut him.
Yeah, they just had another guy playing. We're just like, hey, just push that scene to another day.
Just put that tomorrow, man. It's Bob Kane.
Burton's like, we're on a tight schedule, man.
I mean, from what I've heard, from my 10 years of going to comic book conventions, Bob Kane was not, no one ever wanted to hang out with Bob Kane.
He was not the most popular guy.
Yeah.
Really?
There was no love. Bill Finger
was much more beloved.
And forgotten. And
yeah.
Yeah.
You watched the documentary?
I have not seen it yet. I really want to, though.
Yeah, you should.
Which documentary is that?
Batman and Me or something. It's like Bob Finger. It's a documentary about this guy's quest to get Bill Finger his due.
And it's on Hulu, I believe.
Yeah, it's a Hulu original documentary.
Yeah, if you don't know Bill Finger's story, you know, essentially co-creator / made a lot of what Batman is Batman. Look him up because
the Batmobile, the Batcave,
Robin. Yeah.
Who was the Joker?
Yes, the Joker was.
No, didn't someone else co-create the Joker?
I believe you're right. I think it was Finger and somebody else, but at that point, it was still all the issues just showed Bob Kane's name, so. I don't remember now off the top of my head.
Jerry Robinson.
Who created that quilt guy?
Crazy quilt?
Crazy quilt, yeah. Crazy
that's
quilt.
That's what we really need.
Yeah. But that's, again, one of the other things. I guess that's the thing that they talk about the Joker with Batman is that Batman is such a serious character that the fact that the Joker is so funny and over the top is a good juxtaposition. But there were a lot of really weird Batman villains.
Yeah.
Like that.
Crazy Quill, yeah. Even, Condiment King,
yeah.
Killer Moth, Kite Man. Yeah. I mean, you have a lot of, ridiculous characters.
Hey, you got to come up with characters, man. You can't go stale.
Yeah. Well, and especially back in the 50s, it was just like, I don't know, it's a monkey with a jetpack. Who cares? Just get it on the stands.
Monkey with a jetpack's pretty good.
Yeah, monkey is pretty good, actually.
I mean, you got 80 years, multiple monthly issues.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to come up with something. He can't just be fighting the same dudes all over and over and over again.
Right.
So we do get the crazy origin Joker story where he gets thrown into a vat of acid, or it's acid, right?
It's chemicals.
Boiling
green chemicals.
We get his ungloved hand come out. It's the only time.
Very cool scene.
And then we get the really cool surgery scene where he's like, the mirror.
Mirror. Great scene.
And the light is flickering around and stuff. It's such an iconic, cool scene. But that's when you see that he has a permanent smile.
Well, actually, you don't see it there.
No, you just see
You see a little bit, but mostly it's kept in the dark, and it's just his reaction. It's all about the laugh.
Yeah.
And him breaking the mirror and everything. And then it's not till he goes back to Jack Palance and does a little bit of that, I was your number one guy thing.
Yeah.
And then he comes into the light. You see the white face for the first time and the smile, and he shoots him and he starts dancing around and does the Joker laugh.
Yeah, which is, he also has that great scene with the board where he walks in and he kills a guy with the buzzer, or the hand buzzer. But he has that great line where he's like, what's with the stupid smirk? And he's like, oh, life has been good to me.
Yep.
And it's such a great Jack Nicholson delivery, man. It really, say what you will. I remember people being mad about Heath Ledger being cast as a Joker. And the reason for that is that Jack Nicholson had kind of knocked it out of the park. Like, his crazy, hammy Joker was so fucking awesome and iconic and memorable. Well,
but it's also, it's the nature of comic book movie casting is they're all, it's always complaints. When Michael Keaton was cast, it was like, oh, come on, little comedian guy, yeah, come on. When it's Heath Ledger, it's what, the gay cowboy? Like, come on.
Yeah.
You know, it's, now it's a
Twilight, Robert Pattinson. Right. Yeah,
Twilight guy, come on. But,
you know, you
more often than not.
Yeah. I mean, maybe not Val Kilmer, but, you know.
Not really his fault, though.
Yeah, not necessarily his fault. He could have been a fine Batman.
He would have been all right.
No, he was a good, I think he was a good Batman. I just think it was convoluted. The whole movie was just...
Yeah, I mean, the movie
was... it was pretty aimless.
Yeah.
Well, we were talking about this with George Clooney, too. Like, George Clooney, not a good Batman, but a pretty good Bruce Wayne. Like, if you could have...
Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely Joel Schumacher. And
yeah,
just not really having a clear idea
what
to do.
With Batman and Robin, he almost had a clear idea where he was... I think Batman and Robin, much more so than Forever, he's like, no, we're doing 66.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing.
It's just jokes.
Yeah, it's just... Yeah. It's Adam West and all that stuff, but they just didn't go far enough.
Yeah. Yeah, you either got
to go... It didn't have much of a motivation. You had Mr. Freeze, who wanted to freeze everything, and then you had Poison Ivy, who wanted to grow plants, and then you had Bane, who wanted to just...
Smash stuff.
Smash. Yeah, there was just...
Yep.
And then you had like a weird pissing match between Batman and Robin, and then Batgirl was like wanting to be Batgirl, and
like you said, it's aimless. It's all over. It's just a million stories, none of them really that tightly connected.
Yeah, it's like, what famous person can we put in here now? It was like like an episode of The Muppets. Like, what famous person can we put in this?
Yeah. Or an SNL skit. It was like, all right, we got 5 minutes. We're gonna get all the rest of the iconic Batman villains in here. Just come up with something.
Yeah, when we'll get celebrities to come in. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a problem with those movies.
Yes. So, anyways, yeah, you get Joker takes over the town. Also, I love this so much. It's so ridiculous. He's having his very first meeting as the Joker. Kills that guy with the buzzer. His henchmen call him in. His henchmen already have branded Joker jackets with like the
1950s
style. Yeah, yeah. Joker. Oh, I would kill for one of those things.
It's like, it's not even the Jack Nicholson Joker. It's like the 50s Joker on the patch. Like, was he on the phone with the printer that morning? Like, no, I need 50 Joker stand. Like,
it's like, give me all the sizes because I got a lot of dudes.
I got a lot of dudes.
They have the shoulder, the breast, the back.
Can I get one for my helicopter?
Yeah.
Or can I get purple leather? You don't have enough.
I think it must have been Prince who was involved. You know,
right?
Prince
It's like, I need all your purple leather. He's like, come on, I'm Prince. I have a lot of purple leather, but.
I am purple leather.
You just say it. I just wish it, and it comes through.
It's true.
It comes true. I just wish it true.
Can we also talk about?
You know, still has Batman 89 has the best soundtrack, I think.
Oh yeah, yeah. The Prince song.
Was it between the Prince and the Danny Elfman score?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Score and the soundtrack.
They're both really good.
Yeah.
I mean, because I don't really remember. I mean, Returns. Obviously, you still have the Danny Elfman score, but I don't remember a lot of music in Returns.
There's that great Smashing Pumpkins song.
And
Forever, I think, or Batman and Robin. It might be Batman and Robin.
It's actually Batman and Robin because Forever, it's Kiss from a Rose.
Yeah, yeah.
And You Too.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. You Too. Yeah, so it has to be Batman and Robin has that great Smashing Pumpkins song in it. End is the beginning is the end.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's the one.
That's a great song. But none of them hold a candle to Party Man and that great fucking song.
And music video. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that great idea that he's just like, I want to impress this girl, but I also want to destroy as much art as I possibly can.
Chaos.
Yeah.
Chaos.
So I really want to talk about Alfred because I think he's really funny in this movie. But before we do so, I really want to talk about our sponsors.
Yeah, let's do some sponsors, some plugs, some stuff like that.
Yeah.
So People's Choice Video Express in Tucson, Arizona sponsors us. You can go there and rent all the movies, all the Batman movies, including...
The new ones, the old ones,
the animated stuff. The
animated series, sure.
Yeah, you can rent, buy, get games.
That's right, Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, Dope-Ass Games.
Pop culture, t-shirts and stuff like that. Yeah. All you want some shop, People's Choice Video.
Check them out. And Henry, plug your comic again and plug your stuff.
Hey, thanks. Yeah, La Voz de Mayo, Tata Rambo, out through Image Comics. If you're in Tucson and you're listening to this, Antigone's has copies. I know Heroes and Villains and Charlie's Comics. And eventually you'll be able to reorder it, but it's on Amazon, Books, Barnes & Noble, bookstore.org, Target, Walmart, wherever you get books.
Yeah, check it out, man.
Yeah, so we'll post up the link too when we post up the episode.
Thank you.
Anything else you want to plug? Any Top Cow events we should know about?
Yeah, I mean, Top Cow is celebrating 25 years of Witchblade, and it's really
cool. Awesome
to have such an iconic female protagonist, art by Michael Turner, who, late, great, amazing artist. And, we're also planning some stuff for more Top Cow Universe characters like the Darkness, and there's a new pirate comic coming out called The Man Monkey by Stephanie Phillips and Craig Cermak. Should be coming out next month, but because of COVID-19, Diamond is suspended sending new products, so it's kind of undetermined on when these books are going to be shipped out. But yeah, no, check out TalkCow.com, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, with the quarantine going on, I know I've had some time to catch up on some comics, so it's a great time to pick up Henry's comic here, and you can get it online. Yeah. I'm pretty sure
it's on TalkCow.com. All the first issues are free to download, and La Voz de Mayo Chapter 1 is on there.
Awesome. Awesome, man.
Yeah, check it out. Now you got everybody's got time now. There's no excuse anymore.
Yeah, get to it.
Yeah, no, definitely. And the Pima County Library has
lots of
copies. And once they open up, you can put it on hold.
Yeah,
awesome.
And everybody's doing like curb pickup and stuff like that. You can still order it and go pick it up. I think Heroes and Villains, you can drive up and pick it up.
Oh, good.
Like
yeah. Zia's in California, there's none of that.
None of that. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
But, I mean, if nothing else, you can get it delivered from.
Amazon.
All right, sweet. Well, definitely check that out. And so, yeah, I wanted to talk about Alfred specifically, and it's not even Alfred so much as it's Alfred and Bruce's relationship in this movie, where Bruce Wayne in this movie, he's not the world's greatest detective. I'll tell you that much. There's the scene like early on when they're looking at all the armors and Alfred comes up and he's like, sir, the commissioner just left urgently. And he's like, oh, okay. Urgently, sir. He's like, all right, I heard you. Urgently. And he's like, oh, okay, yeah. And then he's like, and then he starts to walk away and Alfred's like, perhaps you want to go that way?
Yeah.
And it's like...
I was like, oh, that's right, the Batman thing.
He's like, oh, yeah, Batman. I'm Batman. Okay, yeah, let me do Batman stuff. Sorry, guys.
That's right, I got to do the Batman thing all the time right now.
Yeah.
Thanks. Good thing being on top of that, Alfred.
Exactly. Yeah. Way to look out.
Yeah, that actor is, I mean, the best Alfred. I mean, that Batman the Animated Series Alfred is definitely...
It's pretty good, yeah. Yeah. No, he's a great... he had been around forever.
He had done a lot of horror movies back in the day.
Yeah. He's a great actor. And was he in all of the four? In the two Schumachers as well,
one.
Right?
He's the only one.
Yeah, not even the Batman, the same one. Everybody else, yeah.
Alfred, though.
Yeah, it's great. What else you got about Alfred?
Oh, that's pretty much it. I just thought that was really funny.
That was a whole bit.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely grounded him. You know, he was a great, a Batman, you know, growing up with no parents. He was the dad. He was the, like, big brother.
Well, and he's such an important character in the comics, where he really does feel that big, or that father figure, I think much more so than in the movies.
Yeah, like none of the movies are really done.
I mean, Alfred Michael Caine does that a little bit, like especially in, you know, like Returns and stuff, or not Returns,
Rises.
Rises, when he's like, you know, breaking down and crying and all that stuff. But no, the other thing I did want to mention about Alfred is, so after he fucks Vicky Vale, two very funny things happen. So the first thing that happens is he gets up and goes and sleeps upside down.
Oh yeah, that's right. He's like a bat would.
Like a bat would, which is so ridiculous.
And he's just stretching out his spine.
Yeah. Well, he's a short guy. He wants to get taller.
Stay limber. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but then he tells Vicky Vale, he's like, we're going out of town and, you know, things are kind of weird right now. And she's like, oh, okay. And then she walks down the stairs and she's like, well, you know, have fun out of town, Alfred. And Alfred's like, well, we're not going out of town. It's like,
oh,
like you got to have your band's wing.
Horrible.
Like,
horrible.
Yeah.
He also immediately brings her down to the Batcave later
on. Exactly. Yeah. And then he immediately like brings her down to the Batcave and is just like, oh yeah, he's Batman. Didn't you know that?
Oh, he didn't tell you he was Batman. Oops. Anyway, here she is. But it is these like little things like that that are funny because watching him now, I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. Well, the reason I forgot about that is because it's so much about the Joker and right. and his big balloons and him killing people but making them smile and laugh hysterically.
The crazy shadows, the cinematography, the gargoyles, mm-hmm. and the swooping shots and the matte paintings. I really love the matte paintings in this movie. It really makes me miss that like old school style of filmmaking.
Yeah, even in the beginning there's a part where Batman is animated.
Yeah, you just see him like his shadow move.
Yeah,
it's clearly like an animated shadow.
Yeah, the effects in this are amazing for 1989. They're still old school effects. They're all like Dracula.
Yeah.
Hammer movie effects. It's all matte paintings and animated stuff and like putting smoke in front of the camera and stuff like that, you know. It's really cool. It's one of the most charming things about it. But you guys were talking about it before we started about how it drags. It's not a very fast movie. Like it's
yeah, it does take its time. There's a lot of patience that I think we don't have in 2020.
Yeah, that's fair.
In the Marvel
cinematic, we've got to have a couple jokes and get some explosions and stuff in there for sure.
Yeah, because it's over 2 hours, which I'd forgotten about. It always felt to me like a nice lean 145.
Yeah, no, it's definitely 2 hours long, and it's also a lot of the movie. It's a funny thing too, because as a kid, you watch this movie and you're like, "Fucking Batman is so cool, man! He's so cool!" And then you watch this movie again, and you're like, he actually gets his ass kicked and runs away a lot. Yeah. He spends a lot of the movie running away and getting beat up and knocked down. I mean, obviously, eventually he like, you know, he wins. And
he blows up a lot of dudes.
And he kills like 50 dudes.
He blows up a lot of dudes. There's a lot of bombs exploding in it.
Yeah.
Which I'd forgotten about.
I'd remembered he had like some, like, I remember the scene where he's flying down and he's like shooting the guns off the bat wing or whatever. But yeah, I'd totally forgotten. He drives into that warehouse, just drops a bomb, kills like 30 guys.
But the thing is that they pull out, so you don't know if he killed those 30 guys.
Yeah, right. You don't see their heads explode, so they're fine. Right.
Yeah, you don't see them get gunned down.
I'm surprised it's not the G.I. Joe thing where we just saw some like dudes in parachutes in the background.
Yeah, like, you know, that's how it works. They're fine, yeah.
Right.
But yeah, the Joker does all the fun stuff in it.
Right.
He does. He has the best lines. He has where does he get those wonderful toys? Why didn't somebody tell me he has one of those things?
Or the great, like, you know, when they're like, you know, Bat Freak terrorizes Gotham. Wait until they get a load of me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how you know you have a memorable character.
And doesn't he say this city needs an enema?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, he does say this city needs an enema. Yeah. And which then, should.
He cuts his own commercial.
This was a big thing in the 80s. I don't know if you realize this. Ghostbusters, this movie, Gremlins doesn't Gremlins 2 have a commercial bit?
It's commercial-ish, but it's just a gremlin talking to the camera.
Oh, okay. I'm getting that confused, but I feel like there was at least 10 movies in the 80s where they're like, no, the characters make a commercial.
Yeah. He produces, cuts his own commercial, and it edits with what's happening in live television.
Right. And there's never any explanation to how he does any of this stuff, right?
Because it's Joker.
He cuts into a live feed on every network.
Well, back then, there was like, you know, a handful of channels.
That's true.
Yeah, it was like five networks.
Well, and it's also, it's not really 1989. It's like
19. I don't know. Yeah. And there's a lot of ambiguity about the time, especially in the cartoon. Like there's cars there's a lot of, you know, there's a computer that can think on its own.
Yeah, it's like old future.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Jules Verne future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like World's Fair, World of Tomorrow, but as if it actually happened.
Right.
Right.
It's funny when you look at, speaking of future stuff, and real quick, but it's funny when you look at future, when people talked about the future, there was always like a bunch of things that were going to happen. First of all, flying cars. Ever since like 1840, flying cars were going to be a thing.
Right.
Robots was another one.
Yep.
And then video phones. And we talked about this a little bit before.
Yeah. You would still have pay phones.
There would still be payphones, but there would be video. And it would always be like, of course, the next step is this is going to be a video and you're going to be able to see people's faces. Nobody ever predicted that we were going to be like, nah, I'm going to text everybody. Like, I don't want to, I don't want to see faces.
Like but we already have letters. It's like, no. But talking to people, that's hard.
Yeah. No, just I want to be able to fit everything into 140 characters. Yeah,
exactly.
And just send that out. Yeah. But this is, but that's how the Batman kind of universe is. It's like, yeah, robots. Yeah. Flying cars.
Yeah.
Cell phones. No cell phones.
No cell phones.
Too futuristic.
Yeah. Tube rotary televisions phones. And rotary phones. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Tube televisions. Yeah. It's the other one. Exactly. But I love that charm, that crazy old
again, it's
future.
That, it's that great, and it's also, if this movie was like, no, we're going to make it 1989 future, it would be dated as hell.
Yeah.
But because it's this weird, timeless, past future, you're like, yeah, it's fine. Like, it still works as well today as it did
then. Yeah. I think that's like one of the things that these movies do is it tries to make Batman plausible. Like, the world he's in and everything he's doing seems practical and possible.
Right.
Right. And if you invent the world, then you can invent anything in the world. So then everything that Batman does, and Tim Burton's great at that, he invents the entire city. So everything that Batman does in it makes sense because the city is not a city based in real life.
Yeah, it's not New Chicago. York, it's not Chicago. It's Gotham. It's a weird city of Art Deco designs and gargoyles and shadows everywhere and...
Yeah. So when a big clown guy shows up with a big balloon and throwing cash out and people come out, you're like, yeah, maybe that happens in Gotham. Sure.
Yeah. They have clown
This is Tuesday night. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's the other thing we're talking about is that we watched an episode of the animated Batman where a guy is like a district attorney and he's like, we're going to catch that Joker and we're going to catch that Batman. And then he has a party and he hires a clown. And obviously the clown turns out to be the Joker.
Jacko.
Yeah, Jacko.
Exactly. Yeah, remember that episode? So it's a great episode, but we were talking about if you're in Gotham, like, don't have a party where you hire a clown. Don't have a circus.
No.
Yeah. Don't have a carnival.
Don't screen it. Yeah.
Yep.
9 out of 10, your odds of the Joker just taking over your shit and destroying
it are pretty high.
10 out of 10.
Like, be smart about that, man. Don't hire a clown.
Do not hire a clown. Especially after you just went on television and was like, we're going to get that Joker.
Yeah. Joker's going to.
And you did.
Yeah. I'm glad you knew that episode. That's a great episode.
Yeah.
Jacko.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. The kid wants to be a clown. And
that's
right.
Yeah. That's a cool little like.
Saves Batman.
Yeah. Yeah, look at that.
That's fucking sick.
Hell yeah. I've seen that at the con before, and every time I see it, I'm like, oh, I want that guy. Oh, that's fucking cool.
So if you're not, we're going to put some stuff up on YouTube, but if you're just listening to the audio podcast, the man just busted out the classic 1992 Batman the Animated Series Batmobile.
Oh, I got one more thing.
The deluxe version of the box set, I believe.
Also a Bane bust.
Also Bane and... Oh, Mask of the Phantasm.
Oh.
The best Batman movie.
Yep. Arguably the best Batman movie, Mask of the Phantasm. I got that.
My roommate gave me the Batmobile. She used to work at DC Collectibles.
Nice.
Oh, no. I got that from someone else. A friend of mine. I helped him move, and I said the only payment I will take is that.
Yeah, that's a good payment.
I've helped a lot of people move. I have never gotten anything as cool as that. So I'm very jealous.
The Bane bust was for my birthday in January this year.
Nice.
And cool. Shout out to Golden Apple Comics, who I had to give them some free comics, and I got this tour.
To get that awesome Mask of the Phantasm.
Yeah, nice. This was a nice gift from Ryan. That's Golden Apple in LA. So if you like comics, they're doing a $50 medium USPS priority box full comics.
Sweet. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Check them out. But that's dope. Mask of the Phantasm.
Mask of the Phantasm was, I had argued for a very long time up until the Nolan movies. It was, to me, by far, hands down, the best Batman movie.
Yeah, I was lucky. My parents took me to the drive-in to see it.
To see it? Oh, nice. That's a good... Yeah, I saw it in
the theater,
too. They wouldn't
tell me and my sister what was playing, and we were like... We would just go to the Dianza. I don't know if you guys ever went to the Dianza.
Yep.
We'd sneak in, like, a couple boxes of Little Caesars and a
Yep.
Giant liter of soda. And they wouldn't tell us. And then once the horns played and the classic Warner Brothers, Bugs Bunny, I knew exactly what was going to happen.
Yeah.
That's great.
I'm mad about the Dianza because if we would have supported it, we would still have it. And it's the only theater that we could go to right now.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's just the Dianza. It's just it's a relic, you know. It was one of those things.
Yeah, man. Drive-in movies were on for a long time, and just eventually they were not they weren't cost effective.
Well, it just wasn't. I think it wasn't advertised enough. I think they weren't doing. I think they could have done a better job at curating really cool movies and nights.
Oh yeah,
that's true. If they would have went more like the
Loft. If it was theater, the Loft,
yeah, like the Loft. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
At the Dianza, I think it'd be really cool.
Yeah, for sure.
I missed that.
Yeah, the last movie I saw there was Inglourious Basterds.
I saw that too. I saw it on the night that they shut down. The last night they were open.
I was there. Me and my high school sweetheart at the time, we were going to try to do it on the last night there. And a friend of mine, who was a female friend, was coughing and laughing. And we heard each other. And she was like, can I sit in the back of your truck and smoke weed? While we watched this movie, and my girlfriend looked at me, and I couldn't say no. Like, yeah, you could. And that totally killed any possibility. Yep.
That was a big mistake. You missed out on the very romantic and glorious bastards hookup.
Yeah,
these Nazi scalps are making me so horny.
Yeah, business was not a booming.
Yeah, that was a mistake. That was a rookie move. But it's a nice guy move. That's what
it is.
It's
one of those things that you can only do in a drive-in is have someone jump in the back of your truck and smoke a joint.
Smoke a whole bunch of weed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, most of my memories are about smoking weed and eating a bunch of stuff.
At the drive-in? Yeah.
Anywhere. Just that's all your memories, right?
Yeah, that's it. Just in general, end of list. Yeah, that's it. Those are most of my memories. Other times that I got high. All right, I guess let's wrap up the movie.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're blasting through it, but you've all seen Batman. You know, they have the whole scene at the art museum where they destroy all the stuff. They have the Prince song. Batman runs away a bunch.
Get crazy.
Yeah.
Let's get nuts.
Yeah.
We do have to slow down and talk about that scene for just a moment. The scene where Bruce Wayne grabs a fire poker and starts just acting like a fucking maniac.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You want to get nuts? Let's get nuts. Yeah, that's right.
What the fuck was that?
It was just him telling him to shoot him, right? And then he shoots him.
Yes, but why would he think if he shoots me, he won't hurt the girl because his bloodlust will be sated?
I think his point isn't even about her. It's about him being able to sneak away, right? So if they shoot him, then he falls on the ground.
He could have just snuck away. He was already in hiding.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I mean, I don't know. I think he had the opportunity to stop it. But he was outmatched.
Yeah.
It was just, yeah.
He didn't have
also, cool gadgets. I think we forgot to talk about, I mean, one thing before this all ends is the, have you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight?
Nice. So, yeah, let's talk about that a little bit because this becomes a whole, you created me, I created you.
You created me. Yeah.
So where they introduce, and this was not in the comics, but they introduce the idea that the Joker, Jack Napier, killed Bruce Wayne's parents. And that, you know, Bruce, which is kind of in the Killing Joke and stuff, was partially or at least responsible for the Joker falling into the chemicals and becoming all Jokerified and whatever. Kind of controversial.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it goes against the comic, but in a screenplay format, it makes sense
for a movie.
Right. It's very forgivable, and if you're just looking at it as a movie, it ties in. That makes sense.
But then, like you said, I mean, it does bring in that line, which becomes another incredibly iconic line from this movie.
Something that the Joker says, I tell my victims that every time, even though he's never told anybody on screen.
Yeah, even though he's never he's killed like 50 people at this point and has not said it once. Yeah. But that it's almost like halfway through the movie, they're like, oh, you know what would be cool?
No, this is just, it's like Samuel L. Jackson. He doesn't clearly read that to all his guys that he shoots. Just the cool ones.
When he thinks it's going to be for a cool scene. Yeah.
Yeah, it just shows how erratic and how, you know, out of touch he is. Like, in his head, it's happened.
Right.
Yeah, that's
true.
Yeah. He said it like three times, but in his head, it's every time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he starts a parade where he gives away millions of dollars.
Right, so this is after. So the Joker has poisoned the city with all kinds of chemical, like makeup and deodorant, baby powder.
Batman cracks the case.
Right.
And he finds out which combinations are the ones that are poisoned. So he puts
You get that very funny scene of the television reporters not wearing makeup.
Right.
And they look very hideous, which is.
Hell yeah.
And so then Joker, very mad about this, is like, well, you know what? I'm going to give away $20 million on a parade.
Out in the streets. And
no explanation where he got the money. No explanation where he got the parade.
He's a Joker. He's got money. He took Jack Palance's money.
I assume he took Jack Palance's money.
But then also, I like the idea, which back then used to sound so ridiculous to me, that people would like run out to the guy that has been poisoning him.
This guy's been poisoning the city. He's giving away money. I guess it's fine.
And clearly he's going to poison you. But nowadays, I feel like people are okay with that type of stuff. Like... You know,
people are dumb.
Yeah. People just do it just to come out and like rally for something and to get some money. But yeah, everybody runs out and then nobody saw that coming. Yeah.
Poison starts flooding into the streets.
And then that's when we get the Batwing.
Yeah.
He shows up with the awesome Batwing. He cuts the balloons. He lets them loose.
Only to fall on, I guess, Metropolis a week later.
Probably.
Have a whole big problem there.
Oh, yeah. The Gotham River.
Right.
Yeah. Just
all
floating
their food supply is destroyed for the next year.
But remember that time that Batman saved us? When we were getting money in the streets?
Yeah. Anyways, don't eat any of the food. You'll die.
I like that the Joker can stop the Batwing with one super long gun.
Yes.
One very really funny cool revolver. Cannon.
It's also hilarious too because
I like it a lot.
Again, in Batman being maybe not as competent as his job as you would think, he has all these guns and missiles that he's firing at the Joker, misses every single one.
He's patenting it.
Yeah, and then the Joker just shoots
one
the sky.
One shot.
Yeah.
Takes the girl, goes back to the warehouse. Batman's got to go there.
He's got
to
go.
It's like a giant skyscraper.
Yeah, it's a giant tower. It's like some church tower with a giant
bells
at the top.
Yeah.
Batman once again gets his ass handed to him at the top.
Yeah. One 54-year-old Jack Nicholson and one 30.
Well, since the athletic.
He can't turn his head.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And he couldn't hear, evidently. So Michael Keaton talks about this. Could not hear a goddamn thing in the bat suit.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah.
I knew that he felt claustrophobic.
Yeah, he
talks about that too, yeah. So anyways, eventually Batman overcomes the henchman, which also don't know, like, were the henchmen already in the tower? Where did they get
from? Yeah, obviously. Come on.
I don't know.
The Joker's got this.
Come on.
The Joker's got this, dude. He's got this.
But it eventually leads to the showdown with him and the Joker. Joker goes flying over the tower to his death.
Laughing.
It was a joke. I mean, that's what killed him.
Yeah, exactly.
It is really funny, too, that he's still laughing at they have that scene with all the cops around and he's still laughing because it's like the thing in his jacket, which, as you pointed out, is clearly a bomb. Like, don't touch that. It's definitely a bomb.
Yeah, I was very surprised that he didn't just blow all the cops up. But it's fun that he had a bit set up for his death.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, if I die, there's going to
be... There was also, like, I mean, that... Is he dead? You know, it was like a...
Yeah, exactly.
He's dead.
Yeah. Oh, no, yes.
Is he?
or is the Joker eternal?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're meant to do it forever.
Right?
Yeah. So, that's kind of the end of
the movie. Yeah, then it ends with them doing the bat signal in the sky, and it's like, oh, Batman's here. And Kim Basinger, of course, is obviously going to be around forever because they're very much in love.
He's not going to just keep switching girls out every movie.
Of course.
It'll always be the same girl. He's like James Bond. He just has different girls.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it sets it up, and it makes $269 million.
Yeah.
It's the fourth highest grossing movie in the 1980s.
Becomes a giant hit. Worldwide sensation. And also, like, yes, it made a lot of money in the box office, but you talk about VHS, you talk about T-shirts, lunchboxes, toys. Pretty much anything you could slap that 1989 Bat logo on, that was getting sold.
Yep. Yeah. It was a
ton. I think that movie was the start of nerds giving a shit about why the movie makes money. You know, like, you never think about how Parasite was the number one, like, it won the Academy Award.
Right.
But no one ever remembers how much that movie made.
Right. Right. Yeah. You're right.
You know, it's like, why do we care? And that's like a measurement on whether it's good or not.
Right. And it was also, Batman was nominated for a bunch of Academy Awards too, right? It was nominated for
It actually wasn't. So they tried, they pushed it for a bunch.
Yeah.
But I think the only one it actually got was like best set direction.
Yeah, something like that. Which it deserved. Because the set direction was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great looking movie. And like I said, I actually, funny enough, I enjoy it now more than I think I did 20 years ago. Like just because of how cool everything looks and how great the score is and how like kind of I don't know, just charming all of the old school effects
and
paintings and stuff like that are,
and the characters and all that stuff. It's really cool.
But as much as we like this movie, we have now reached the point in the podcast where we gotta fix it.
I would like every time he punches a guy for it to say pow
yeah.
Really big on the screen.
I think Michael Keaton a little too in shape, maybe give him a little pudge. Maybe have him call people chums. Is that basically what you're getting at?
No, if it could be. All right, so we talked about this when we were watching it last night. This could have been a Beetlejuice sequel.
Oh, yes.
Where instead of the Joker, it's Beetlejuice, and now he's loose on the city. And there's just like one ghost-busting dude.
Right. Even if you just take Batman out of it, and it's just Bruce Wayne billionaire in love with a lady who the Beetlejuice is also in love with, you really don't have, other than taking out about 10 minutes of Batman stuff, you don't have to change a goddamn thing.
Hey, just be Beetlejuice. Yeah. Also, I like that you call them the Beetlejuice.
The Beetlejuice. Look, it's the Batman. It's the Beetlejuice. It's fine.
It's like the Babadook.
Yeah, the Babadook. Sure.
He's just a Beetlejuice. So what if it's Michael Keaton as Batman and also Michael Keaton as Beetlejuice?
See, and that saves us money right there.
Yeah, because we just pay the one guy.
The one guy.
And then can we still get Alec Baldwin in there?
I mean, that's, yes.
Short answer is yes.
Long answer is, he just worked with Alec Baldwin. Why the hell wasn't Alec Baldwin Batman? That dude is a Batman as motherfucker when he's young.
No, he's super skinny.
He was the Shadow.
He was the Shadow. Yeah, he was the Shadow. You're right.
But that's why. Like, he's basically Bruce Wayne / Batman. Like, you're same fucking guy.
Now I kind of want to cut, like, the Shadow and...
Ran Batman 89?
Yeah. Beetlejuice.
And Beetlejuice? Yeah. Make all three of them one movie?
Yeah, why not? You make one trailer.
Or you just make a crossover. I know it's 89, they weren't really doing crossovers yet. It was unheard of. But if you have Batman and the Shadow team up to take on Beetlejuice...
Now we're talking.
Because he's the ghost with the most, and they have no really superpowers except for the Shadow can cloud men's minds. But does that work on a ghost?
Well, the Shadow knows what evil lies in the hearts of men. Yeah,
that's true.
Right? That's a power.
That is a power. He does have telepathic and telekinetic powers.
Yeah,
you're right.
I guess. Yeah. No, there's no stopping also Beetlejuice. Guns. That's true.
He shoots a lot of people.
He does shoot a lot of people. He can change his face too, right?
I really like the Shadow. Shadow's dope.
Yeah. But yeah, I feel like Shadow, Beetlejuice, Batman.
Or what if it's just Beetlejuice and the Joker team up to play Batman, or team up to fight Batman, and they're all Michael Keaton?
All three Michael Keatons?
Yeah.
Isn't there like an Inception like fan cut of Batman that like mixes?
I want to hear about this.
Yeah, there's a video on YouTube where it's like all the Batmans, and Leo has to like go into the mind of Batman.
Oh, that's pretty good.
It's a cool video. Yeah.
Everybody's different weird Batman dreams that they're having.
Yeah, so every level is like begins, returns.
And there are a lot of similarities. I mean, you have the scene in this where he's flying the Batwing at the Joker shoots him. You have the scene in Dark Knight where they go, "Come on, hit me." Where he's driving the motorcycle at him. Yeah, there's a lot of.
So they're all one dream within
a dream.
They're
all one dream within a dream, and that's why you get those little crossover effects.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. So we all like Batman, right? There's been, 20 people that have played Batman in the movies? Let's say 20. It's probably 20. What if we just all of them?
Like a multiplicity type of? Not multiplicity because
it's all Michael Keaton, yeah, which would be good.
All Michael Keaton multiplicity Batman is pretty good, too.
And actually, I mean, this is separate from that conversation, but Michael Keaton's at the perfect age to do Dark Knight Returns, guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we make that happen?
He's been talking about a Beetlejuice, like coming back for that.
That's true. Beetlejuice too. Yeah.
Yeah. Can we make Michael Keaton?
There was a story he told about how he was doing Birdman and one of the production guys stopped someone who was riding a bicycle and he had a gigantic Beetlejuice tattoo on his arm. And they called Michael Keaton over, and like Michael Keaton was like very impressed. And he was looking at it so long that the guy was like, "Are you done?" And then he biked away, and they were like, "He didn't realize who you were." Oh,
he just thought it was a guy that liked his tattoo. Just,
hey, this old guy likes my tattoo. All right, whatever.
He's a guy in New York, so he's like, "Hey, man, hurry it up! Come on, I got places I gotta be, man.
I go to a pizza joint or something. Whatever New York people do."
Yeah, I'm walking over here.
Exactly. I'm biking, huh?
That's funny. That's a great story.
That is really funny.
All right, so that's
I guess that's it. You fixed Batman.
Yeah, we fixed it.
We totally fixed it. There were so many Michael Keatons in this thing.
So many Michael Keatons. I mean, that's a great answer for any movie. So many just Michael add Keatons. More Michael mm-hmm. Keatons.
Yeah. So you fix all movies.
But yeah, if you did into the Michael Keaton-averse with Batman, I think that totally works.
Again, multiplicity.
There's a new Batman book out, and Michael Keaton wrote the introduction that I need to get my hands on.
Really?
Yeah.
I know that.
What is it called?
I don't know. Just look up Batman, Michael Keaton introduction. Yeah.
And it'll definitely come up with nothing but this movie.
I did that thing where
podcast.
I was...
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And this podcast.
You didn't even upload it. It just shows up.
Yeah, we just got to get that sweet, sweet Google search.
Yeah, exactly. Michael Keaton, Batman, Blockbuster Nostalgia. Let's make it happen. So that's the end of the podcast. We're going to be back next week with
Star Wars.
Yeah, Star Wars. It's finally happening.
Yep.
So until then, I want to, first of all, once again, thank you, Henry, for being on the show.
Thank you so much, man. We really appreciate it.
Hey, one last
shout out to your comic book because people got to go pick that up.
Yeah, thank you. La Voz de Mayo Tata Rambo. It is a biography about my great grandfather, about Native Americans and Mexican Americans. And I'm really happy that it's out there. So if you get a chance, pick it up at your local comic book store. And the book I was just referring to is called Batman, The Definitive History of the Dark Knight in Comics, Film and Beyond. And Michael Eaton did an introduction.
Cool. Nice. Yeah, that's worth reading. Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, check that out. But mainly check out Henry's book.
Yeah, check out my book. Thank you again
for being on the show. And,
yeah, I know. We've been trying to make it happen, and I'm glad we did. And this was a great conversation to have. I love that.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Yeah, thank you again for being here. And until next week, I'm E.G. Seitz.
I'm Francisco Landin.
I'm Henry Barajas.
Wishing you a good night and a good journey.
We love you.
The movie that asked the question, is America ready for a black Two-Face? And then 1995 came rolling around and said, nah.